Welcome to Money Isn't Scary, a podcast for women to explore our fears around money and inspire each other to be financially empowered. I'm Megan Dwyer, and I'm making it my personal mission to remove the taboo around money and help women rewrite their stories so they can stop staying small and begin to live life on their terms. In this show, we get real and uncomfortable as we unpack our beliefs, thoughts, and behaviors that aren't serving us anymore. I can't wait for you to join me on this journey, so let's dive in. Hi, you guys. Welcome to another episode of the Money Isn't Scary podcast. I'm Megan Dwyer. Today, I'm sharing my conversation with the amazing Hannah Pryor. Hannah is an author, a workplace performance expert, TEDx and keynote speaker, and a coach. And Hannah is here to normalize feeling awkward. I just love Hannah's mission of reframing awkwardness. So instead of being something that we should all avoid, we can embrace awkwardness and turn it into a superpower. And I love that I'm talking to her in this context because money is one of those subjects that can be so incredibly awkward for people because it's so uncomfortable. And Hannah's here to help us embrace the awkwardness that comes with living the human experience. And she empowers us to not feel less awkward, but to feel more comfortable handling awkward situations because they're going to happen. That's one thing we know for sure. But before we get into the episode, here's a little bit more about Hannah. Hannah Pryor is a highly sought-after workplace performance expert and an award-winning two times TEDx and global keynote speaker. She's also an executive facilitator and a coach. Her clients call her their secret weapon for impossible change, an honor she wears proudly. She's known for her science-backed approach to improving the performance habits and actions of hungry high achievers in her fun, no-nonsense, no-jargon way to move them from their first level of success to their next one. Her debut book, Good Awkward, published September of 2023 and has been endorsed by NFL quarterback Russell Wilson, former Harvard Business Review editor Karen Dillon, and received the Rare Kirkus Star for Excellence in Writing. And in our conversation today, Hannah and I talk about the definition of awkwardness, what it looks like and why it exists, what good awkward is versus bad awkward, tips for how to build awkward tolerance, and so much more. You guys can find more from Hannah on her socials. So she's out there on Instagram at Hannah Pryor and also on LinkedIn. And you can get her book anywhere you get your books, but you can check it out on Amazon or Barnes & Noble. And you can also check out Hannah's website, prioritygroup.com. And I'm also going to link her TEDx talk in the show notes because it's awesome and you all need to watch it. So go check that out. All right, you guys. So now without further ado, here's my conversation with the incredible Hannah Pryor. Hi, Hannah. Welcome to the Money Isn't Scary podcast. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you for having me. Greatest name for a podcast ever, by the way.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Yeah, I get compliments on it because it's not scary. Just keeping it real. I am so excited to talk to you today about this topic of awkwardness. This is something that hits really close to home for me. I think we can all relate to awkward moments and not knowing how to handle them. And I personally am someone who has always taken my awkwardness like a step further and told myself that it's just part of who I am. And I have identified as that awkward girl who was always kind of different from everybody else for so much of my life. So the idea of normalizing awkwardness is really important to me. And I think this is also really relevant to the topic of, you know, our relationship with money, because it's such an uncomfortable topic. So how do we address it without being awkward, right? We don't really know how to do that, or we weren't taught how to do that, right? So I'm so excited for what we're going to chat about today. But before we dive in into the details, I would love to have you start by introducing yourself and telling everyone more about what you do.
Sure. Thank you for the great introduction. So my name is Hannah Pryor. I am a workplace performance expert, a two-time TEDx speaker, keynote speaker, executive coach, and I recently published a book called Good Awkward, How to Embrace the Embarrassing and Celebrate the Cringe to Become the Bravest You. And I love that we are here talking about money, because talking about money for so many people, like you just said, is so awkward. It's uncomfortable. It's cringy, whether we're the ones bringing it up or it's someone else bringing it up. I think many of us can think back to an interaction or a dialogue where something about money came up and it invited all of those emotions around awkwardness. And so I think exploring this in the context of finances and money, to me, couldn't feel more perfect. So excited to get into it.
I love this. I love this. So what made you want to write about and talk about and learn more about awkwardness?
Yeah, I wish I could say, oh, it's just a business curiosity. No, it's an origin story. I grew up feeling awkward my whole life. And so I think it's funny now when people look at me as a keynote speaker on stages who appears very confident and eloquent and put together. And I just think back to most of my life, not feeling like that, right? It's not necessarily what it looked like, but it's what it felt like. And so just as a quick working definition of awkwardness, awkwardness is the emotion that we experience when the person that we believe we are, so our true self, is momentarily at a gap with the person that other people see on display. In other words, for a moment, who we are is different than who they see. There's this kind of gap space. And in that gap space, we feel the emotion of awkwardness. It is also a social emotion, meaning we don't tend to feel awkward or embarrassed or cringe when we are by ourselves. So if I'm sitting at home and I'm speaking out loud, man, I made X number of dollars last year, and no one is there to hear it, there's nothing awkward or cringy about that. It only starts to feel that way when that stuff gets brought up in a social context, meaning there is an other involved. Somebody else is there. And it is an emotion of discomfort, you know, and it's something that I grew up in a household where we didn't talk about money. It was something that we did not talk about. And so the origin story of awkwardness, specifically as it relates to money, is personal. It's not something we were told we could talk about growing up.
Right. Absolutely. And if that's how you grew up, right, not talking about it, then that's how you're going to continue to raise your family and live your everyday life like that too. It's funny, the example that came to my mind when you were talking about the social emotion of awkwardness, I was thinking like singing in the shower, right? Like we do it all the time, right? If nobody's in the house or nobody's around, but then the second somebody hears you, you're like, oh my God, I'm sorry you heard me, right?
right. And it's, and you can think about it even a step further. Like I can't tell you how many times I sang the wrong song lyric at home by myself, but then you sing it in front of someone else who gives you a look like, that's not what they're saying. That's not what they're doing. And all of a sudden the emotion is completely different. So it's definitely something that becomes awkward because of the social element.
So what comes to mind for me is my kids. So I have two boys that are 7 and 5, and my 7-year-old was just yesterday over in the other room playing with his Legos. And as he's playing, he's imagining in his head and he starts to sing this song, and it just got me thinking. I'm like, oh my gosh, that's the cutest thing. Right. But would we ever do that? So when does that, what's sort of that age or that transition from being a little kid and completely uninhibited and having, you know, no care in the world about what people around you think to actually beginning to feel uncomfortable in those situations?
I love that you called this out and noticed this, because this is actually, the research validates what you're saying. So there's a study from the Association of Psychological Science that discovered that it isn't until early adolescence, usually kicking up around age 8 or 9, that we start to experience self-consciousness. So the emotion of awkwardness is a self-conscious emotion, which essentially translates to we start to look for who we are through the lens of who other people see, meaning we start to care about what other people see. Kids below age 8, again, for the most part, they just haven't developed that self-consciousness yet. They don't care. They will come up to you and go, how much money do you make every year? Yeah. How much money do you have in your wallet right now? Right. They haven't developed that. Oh, what will this person think? What will they see? And most importantly, do they approve of who they see? They just don't care yet, which explains why children with, you know, kind of healthy neurotypical brains will dance with reckless abandon in the kitchen. They will ask about money all day long and not care about it. But around 8 or 9, we start to notice, oh, that person's having a reaction when I bring up money, when I bring up salary, when I bring up, are you married yet? Right? Like things that are for many people so uncomfortable. But until a certain age, that self-conscious emotion hasn't actually evolved in our brain wiring yet. Once it does, we start to get a lot more intentional about scanning for other people's acceptance of how we're showing up. And all of a sudden that emotion becomes much more acute.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so interesting. It's funny because you talk about money, right? In these awkward moments around money. And I personally am on such a mission to make money not awkward, like so that we talk about it more in our house and we're talking about it more with our friends and our, you know, colleagues and people around us, right? But I know that's uncomfortable for people to do. But if we create that kind of safe place, then that I really believe that that can happen. However, there's also just straight awkward moments that will always be awkward. And there's always topics I think that will be awkward no matter what. Yes. What are some of those? And what are maybe some examples?
Yeah, no, I think that's 100% true. The reality is that the emotion of awkwardness exists in uncertainty. So we don't feel awkward when we know exactly what to expect. Even if it's about money, if we have a conversation about money and we are 100% sure about how the other person is going to respond, we may experience some other emotions, but awkwardness is not typically one of them. Awkwardness exists in that uncertain place where we don't know what to expect or our expectations go sideways. We think we're going to get a certain type of response. We think a conversation is going to go a certain way, and it ends up going a different way. The person reacts differently than we thought. They ask a question we didn't expect. So, you know, as it relates to money, there's so many examples. It can be just questions that, depending on our comfort level, we don't feel comfortable answering, right? So if you grew up in a household where it was, don't talk about money, don't talk about how much we make, any kind of conversation around what kind of bonus did you get? You know, what are you making this year? Right. Are you, you know, earning XYZ? Those can be very uncomfortable. I remember, I will never forget it, and I won't name names because I have no idea who listened to your podcast, but I remember someone in my circle, there was a period years ago, I want to say it was 15 or 20 years ago, when there was some sort of like tax credit being awarded to people at certain income threshold levels.
Yeah.
And the person asked me, so do you qualify for the tax credit this year? Which essentially was, did you earn XYZ this year, right?
What's your adjusted gross
income? Yeah. So it was, but it caught me so off guard because I was like, okay, you're not asking me point blank, but that's kind of what's behind it. And I was kind of, you know, it was very uncomfortable, very awkward. I didn't know how to answer. And so often this emotion comes up when anything about money is unexpected, right? So when you're going into the bank and you're speaking to your personal banker or you're meeting with your financial advisor, generally, even if talking about money is a little more difficult, there are certain people with whom there's a different expectation. You know, certain questions are coming. You know, these are going to be brought up. The awkwardness around money tends to be most acute when we either don't expect it or the expectations of what we think we're talking about or going to talk about end up going awry. And all of a sudden we find ourselves recalibrating in that messy middle.
Yeah. And it's funny the way you said, you know, awkwardness exists in uncertainty because so does fear. So does anxiety. And for me, I think it's, and I was just thinking about this recently, it's all about the unknown. We're nervous because we don't know, right? We don't know if we're going to have the same job stability. We don't know if we're going to have, what our salary is going to be. We don't know if we're getting that bonus. We don't know what, you know, and I think we, as much as we can predict, we still have this kind of fear of the unknown. And I think that's what it is. And we need to, I think the workaround to that is learning to lean in and getting comfortable with the discomfort, getting comfortable with the unknown. And I'm guessing that that's probably some of your advice around moving through awkwardness as well, right?
Yeah, I think that, so 100% you're correct. You know, fear, uncertainty, awkwardness, these are all emotions of discomfort. I think the difference between awkwardness is that fear can cover a wide gamut of things. We can be afraid of a million different things. Awkwardness specifically, if we were to laser in a bit, it has a more direct correlation with approval, right? Because it is a social emotion. Our brains are still primitive brains. We are still hardwired for social acceptance. So again, we can be afraid of a lot of things in the privacy of our own home by ourselves. So we can be afraid of things socially. With awkwardness, generally there's an element of scanning for someone else's approval.
Yeah.
Right. What did they expect of me? What did they think? So twofold, you know, part of it is 100% awareness. So how do we build more deepened awareness around awkwardness in particular? What are the stories that we grew up around approval? You know, I'll just share the story I grew up around is, you know, if we talk about money, there was one of two things that would happen. First of all, we don't talk about it. It's rude, right? Or the second is, so people who can't see me, I'm Pakistani. My parents were born in India and Pakistan respectively. And there's something called nazar, which is the same thing as kind of the Greek evil eye. Whereas if you talk about your success, you will have like the evil eye, you know, placed on you.
Fascinating. Okay. Mm-hmm. Wow. So, talk about like levels of shame too, that just
exactly
layers.
Yeah. So for me, you know, the awkwardness around money is very baked in with approval. If you talk about your success, not even just your difficulty with money, your success with money financially, people will not approve. People will look at you a certain way. They'll curse you. You know, that was kind of the message.
Yeah.
So talking about money is not only awkward for me, and or at least it was, I've gotten better, but hearing other people talk about it would feel awkward because of those conditioning, those messages. So, you know, part one is peeling back the awareness. Part two, which you started to allude to, is conditioning. It's reps. It's at bat, right? And right now, social friction is harder and harder to come by. When it comes to money, we online bank. We don't even have to talk to the banker, even though technically we should be able to talk to them about this stuff without feeling awkward, but we don't even have to talk to them. So when somebody else brings it up, we are even that much more unconditioned. We are that much weaker in even talking about these things because they pretty much never have to come out of our mouth if we don't want them to, right?
Exactly.
They're just, we're not used to it.
Such a good point. That's such a good point. And it's interesting what you said too, because there is this sort of, I feel like there's like growing up, right, with that so like intense fear of talking about a subject like that almost creates this like little T trauma inside, right? So that when you're faced with that in the real world now as an adult, it probably like makes your stomach hurt. It makes you so cringe, right? It makes you feel so uncomfortable. And just an example of that, I was talking with somebody one time who worked in the finance hedge fund world back in the day. And it was literally a fireable offense to talk about your salary with another employee. And that's trauma too. I mean, talk about like the stuff that you, those stories and the stuff that you hold like deep inside you that kind of needs to be worked through, kind of needs to be challenged a little bit before you can start to even begin to feel comfortable about talking more about it.
I agree with you. I think most people zoom through that analysis, like doing that kind of peeling back of the layers. What are the stories that I've been told around money? And, you know, again, I love my parents so much. They're the best, but the stories were very clear about when you talk about this, it means that we don't talk about these things. Now, here's the rub. I am a keynote speaker for a living. And part of my own growth edge to this day, if I'm being honest, is over the last 2 years, I'll just say right here out loud, I have consistently raised my fees. I most recently spoke to a new bureau that I'm working with, and I put my fee out there at a number that made me full body cringe. I was like, I can't believe I'm saying this number out loud, right? I can't believe it's even coming out of my body. But here's the thing, like my success and also modeling what I want to see the people I speak to and the people I coach means I have to, right? So it has to really be intentional to take the time to peel back the layers, those messages about what did I receive? My parents were acting in a way that was what they grew up with. You know, our parents' generation grew up with a value around financial stability, about safety, right? These are things that were in their value system. And so I've had to do that mental work to peel back. Why is this hard for me to speak into the room? And what version of this story do I want to tell myself today? Is it one that serves me and where I'm trying to go? But that's not overnight work, right? That's ongoing conversations with a coach, with a therapist, with a mentor, with whoever. But I'm happy to say that I've mostly gotten there, right? And every time I play a little bigger, it comes back. That awkward feeling comes back. But
it's the goalposts keep changing, right?
Yep.
And it's a constant, it's constant change, I guess, is the phrase I wanted to say. But it's constant work. And as we're kind of getting to one point where the goalposts are moving and we're continuing to kind of like level up, and we have to, that there's more challenges, right?
Yep.
But to your point, yes, we need to be the change that we want to see, right? That's the Maya Angelou quote, I think. But especially as mothers, as parents, I feel like we have this kind of responsibility to act in a way that our kids will model, right? And they're going to see if we're uncomfortable or we really are concerned about fear or the awkwardness around something, then they're going to inherit that too. They're just going to naturally know whether you it's talked yeah. about or not, whether, you know, you're actually articulating that we don't talk about this or this is uncomfortable for us. They're just going to inherently know. And that's the yeah. way they're going to continue to, you know, grow up and live and, you know, probably raise their families too. So it's sort yeah. of that, like the generational patterns that's on us. It's our responsibility to start to shift.
Yeah. And, you know, I think some of that stuff dies hard, right? Even with my own children who are now in middle school, I find myself sometimes when they ask me money questions, having a conditioned physical reaction where I want to be like, oh, don't ask that. Don't talk about that. And I actually have to have, you know, a mental sort of designed mental talk track that I rely on in those moments to say, Hannah, you're having a default reaction. Take a breath. How do you want to have your kids feel about these things going forward and then respond from that place versus the default reaction of, oh, we don't talk about this. This is not good to talk about. Right. You know, my kids have asked my husband and I more than once, you know, how much money do we make? Are we rich? Do we have money? I said, well, there's an episode of Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee with Jerry Seinfeld.
Yes. And, I love that show.
And Kevin Hart. Right. And Jerry talks about, you know, the kids have once asked me like, Daddy, are we rich? And he goes, I am.
Yes, I remember that.
We say that joking. No, again, like, you know, my husband and I work very, very hard. We're both, you know, he's in sales. I'm now an entrepreneur, but I spent 14 years in sales. And he said, no, there's no such thing as rich or not rich. I think those are subjective, right? There's no threshold over, but we work very hard and we're grateful to say that we live very comfortably. Do you have specific questions we can answer that do not have to do with what is the dollar and cent decimal in the bank account? Do you have specific questions about expenses, revenue, percentage? Like those are conversations that we try to invite, but even amongst children, it can feel awkward sometimes depending on how pointedly they can ask it. And it's up to us to decide our reaction.
Yeah. And I love that you're having these conversations with your kids and addressing it in this way, because this is exactly the stuff that I teach mm-hmm. through the podcast. It's all about kind of bringing it back to intention and values. And, you know, when the kid says, are we rich? What does that even mean for you? Right? Like, what does that mean? Does that mean that, oh my goodness, now I can compare myself to this other kid at school, mm-hmm. or now we can go on the fancy vacations and get the fancy car or whatever. I don't know what, but the way I think of it when it comes to kids is like, we really need to start to like understand what it is that they're kind of focused on. And there's always a feeling behind the thing. So what is that feeling, right? So getting like, again, peeling back the layers, drilling down into like, what are we getting at here? And that's a really good opportunity to teach them around things like family values and priorities and what matters to you.
Yeah, I read a study years ago that stuck with me. It was from a book called Nurture Shock, which is sort of, if anybody's a fan of like the Freakonomics types of books, it's the Freakonomics, but for kids. It's called Nurture Shock. Oh, and they talked about how from a very, very young age, kids learn to categorize, meaning even a 2-3-year-old toddlers playing soccer on the field, you know, they see, oh, that person's wearing a red penny and I'm wearing a blue penny, right? And so that's why this whole idea of we don't see color doesn't work when it comes to diversity conversations, because yes, they do. Like kids from a young age learn to categorize. And I think it's the same when it comes to money. They will start to see, oh, my parents have two cars in a garage and my friend's parents have one car that is in the driveway. What does that mean? Right. Mm-hmm. And so they start to assign categories and labels, not because of really the reasons we think, but more that's their way of trying to understand the world mm-hmm. in which we live in. And when we allow ourselves to feel awkward about that, I think curiosity dies on the vine. And so I agree with you 100%. I think it's so empowering for us as adults to sit in our own awkwardness about what those conversations represented to us and take that deep breath to say, they're trying to learn. They're trying to categorize the world and make sense of it, not to make me feel shame, not to make others feel shame, not to make anyone feel a certain way, but they just are trying to understand the world. And we have the opportunity to decide, how can we be that teacher? Yes. And it doesn't have to be awkward. It doesn't have to be.
No, I say that all the time too. Yeah. It's a choice. So to that point, right, let's talk a little bit about good awkward, right? Let's talk about kind of how we can respond to awkwardness in a way that, I don't know, maybe doesn't totally like paralyze us or make us feel ashamed and not want to do not want to go out into the real world ever again, right? Like, I know you talk a lot about this in your book and your TED Talk.
Yes. So just look, you know, kind of definition, people are saying, what is good awkward? There is a good awkward. So when we think about bad awkward, we're going to have awkward situations that are uncomfortable. But when I think about bad awkward, I think about being in situations that are awkward and uncomfortable. And the result of those interactions is that we never want to do the thing again, right? We spoke up in a meeting or we talked about money and it didn't feel good and it didn't go well. And therefore the next time there's that opportunity, we don't, or we freeze, mm-hmm. or we're, you know, stuck in inaction. We don't take those big, bold risks and swings because we don't know how it's going to go. Versus good awkward is understanding that, again, awkwardness lives in uncertainty. It is inevitable. And anytime we are trying to grow our jobs, our lives, our bank accounts, our careers, at every inflection point or transition point in our life, we're going to kick up that level of uncertainty. And therefore, awkwardness is going to increase as a result. Chances for awkwardness are going to go up as a result. We then need to make a choice of, do we try to eliminate them and run from them, which we've already learned is not possible? Or do we develop techniques and learn how to actually lean into them? So it's, there's that old metaphor of, you know, when a storm is coming, cattle will run away from the storm versus bison actually run towards it, right? Because it moves through faster when they move towards it.
Yeah.
Awkwardness is the same way. If you think about the emotion of awkwardness, let's say you've had an awkward conversation about something and everyone just kind of, you know, looks at each other uncomfortably and no one says anything. The avoidance of awkwardness increases awkwardness.
How can you even avoid awkwardness? Just you never can't. Leave your house?
Yeah, you can't. But when we find ourselves in those moments, we avoid it. We've all been in it. It just makes it worse. We're like, right, someone say something. So ironically, the muscle to build to embrace the good awkward is to learn how to lean in. And we can lean in a couple different ways. We can learn strategically how to use humor. We can discover some improv techniques, which essentially is agility in the moment. Can we develop more present moment awareness and agility in situations like that? And then my easiest and favorite is, it is so underrated to just name awkwardness when we are in it. Sometimes all it takes is that first person to go, man, that was awkward, right? Or, oh, cringe. I can't believe I said that. That was embarrassing. All it takes is that admission, and you will be amazed to see how everyone's shoulders immediately relax. Everyone giggles and laughs because it's the most human thing there is. And then we can move on. The conversation can continue. But unless we have these structures in place to actually stay in the moment and embrace them and, you know, kind of lean in, it feels like the discomfort just ratchets up. So we got to learn to get good at it instead of trying to eliminate it altogether.
Yeah, it's practice. It's just like anything. Yeah. You just got to work that awkwardness muscle, right?
Yes.
What this makes me think of also is self-compassion. I had Dr. Kristen Neff on the show, who was amazing. And she's
amazing.
Pioneer in self-compassion research. And so she talks about the three components, which is mindfulness, kindness, and common humanity. And I think common humanity is the one that hits so close to home for me, because I always think I'm like the only one going through this right now. I am the only one that's having internet issues and that, you know, stumbles on her words and can't seem to just go through the day smoothly, right? Stubbing my toe on everything, as my husband says, that's the phrase he uses. So it's just really nice to know, I think, that if we can teach ourselves in those moments that, you know, we're not, don't take it awkwardness personally. Yes, we're going through an awkward moment. And at the same time, everybody goes through awkward moments, right?
Yeah, that's spot on. And I love Kristen Neff, and I love what she talks about with common humanity, because that is so much at the heart of this contradiction we put into our minds. We think confidence and awkwardness are somehow contradictory. You know, the people that we look at, we're like, gosh, they're so confident. They're so polished. They're so put together. They must never feel awkward at all.
Right.
Excuse my language. Bullish. Like, yes, they do. In fact, they feel it as often and as acutely as the rest of us. The difference is their comeback rate is lightning fast. They don't linger in it. It doesn't put their hooks in them. They don't ruminate on it for the hours and hours, because they've learned they can't avoid it. So they've learned how to be in those moments quickly and to move through it. You know, my opening story is about Jennifer Lawrence and tripping all over her Oscars dress. And was that embarrassing for her? Of course it was. Nobody feels good tripping at the Oscars in front of all their peers in a fancy dress.
Yeah.
But she learned how to move through it. She got up there and she said something, you know, kind of quippy, like, you're all just clapping because I tripped on myself and that's embarrassing, but here we are. And she became even more endearing for it, right? Because so it's that comeback rate.
She, and I love it too, because we all see ourselves in her, right? Mm-hmm. We see, we're all so human, and we think of these people as like Jennifer Lawrence as not human, as superhuman, as people who, you know, we look up to that don't make mistakes. And that's something that I talk about all the time around making mistakes. I just did an episode on how, I mean, I am a certified financial planner. I've been in this industry for 18 years. I have all this experience. And guess what? Last week I overdrafted my checking account. And I talked about it because things happen and it was stupid. And I had wrote a check back in like June for my kids, like a PTO fundraiser event for their school. And they didn't, and I never write checks. Right. And I forgot about it. They cashed the check like 3.5 months later. Fine. And, but this happens to everyone. And I want people to know though, that like, you can't fear mistakes. You can't, because you can't avoid them. They're going to happen. So the way around this, very much like what you're saying, is let's plan for how we handle those mistakes, because we're going to fall down and those things are going to happen. It's funny. I didn't learn to ski till I was 25 years old.
Me too.
Really? Yeah.
Yeah.
So when I learned, I took a private lesson. That was the first thing I did. And I remember the guy told me, I'm not even going to teach you how to, before he even taught me the pizza and like how to slow down all that stuff. He's like, I'm going to teach you how, you're going to fall and I'm going to teach you how to get up. Cause that's going to keep me on skis. It's going to keep me doing this, right? As long as I know how to get up and I can keep going. And I'm like, that's genius. It's genius. Yeah. And to this day, I'm still, you know, I'm an okay skier. I love to ski, but I'm not going to do anything crazy. And I still fall all the time. And when I do, I know how to get up.
Yeah, I love that. That's such a perfect framing for all of this, because you're right. It's not avoidable. And interestingly, you know, I tend to feel when it comes to money, the money conversation is a moving target. It's always changing. Yes. People's comfort level is across the board. If you try to predict how people will react to money, good luck, right? Like it's a moving target all the time. And so I love what you've described, and the phrase I use in the book often is, you know, I'm not interested in cool and a cucumber confidence, you know, the flawless, polished, you know, I tried to be that for a really long time. I was like, she is not in my purview. Like that version is never coming. I'm somebody who is clumsy and I snort when I laugh and I say the wrong thing and I'm impulsive and it gets me in trouble. And yeah, the cool as a cucumber version is not coming for me. And so what I finally started to do was stop trying to be her. And I embraced my awkward side. I doubled down on it. I was like, you know what? I'm just going to bring this out and see what happens. And guess what? You know what people started to say? Hannah, you're so confident. You're so confident. I'm like, what? This is the part I've been spending my whole life desperately trying to hide.
Yes.
But this awkward confidence comes across as this sort of primal human animalistic confidence. And most people prefer to see that version. That person becomes the relatable, the authentic, the one we can all of a sudden see ourselves in, aspire to be. And especially when it comes to money, you're going to get it wrong and lean in. You're going to get it wrong. And the best thing you can do is learn how to have a comeback rate. That's it.
And just know that you're not alone and keep trying.
Yeah.
Because this is never I feel like so often we're reaching for a goal, like a checkbox that we're never going to get to. You're never going to know everything there is to know, right? Especially about money. The laws are constantly changing. Yeah. Your lives are constantly changing, right? So it's not possible. So I used to strive for that. I used to think that, you know, this is why I always felt like I was sort of a square peg in a round hole in this industry, because here I am, this, you know, self-claimed awkward woman with kids who is, you know, again, tripping over myself and like can't say the right words and all this stuff. And then I see all these like men who are out there with their, you know, tech vests and the button downs, and they're all so smooth and the way their hair's all slicked back. And
I'm going to be me.
And I can't do this, right? I can't do this. But I realized, to your exact point, that when I stopped trying to be them, I stopped trying to be somebody who I'm not, and I started to just embrace who I am and be the best me, flaws and all, then that has helped so much with my confidence and just wanting to be visible and putting myself out there. That's been a huge challenge for me through this podcast work as well, this journey that I'm doing. I mean, I started it trying, I would write scripts and I would like rehearse them and I would put myself out like every little word, try to be perfect. And it would just make me seem more awkward, I feel like. And the more I just embraced it and said, screw it, I'm just going to say what's coming from the heart in the way that I'm going to say it, and whatever, all this stumbling on my words and all, then again, I think it is more relatable. And I think that's what makes so many people appreciate it more because they see themselves in you.
Right. I think this is a good time to just maybe call out that a lot of times when people fear awkwardness, right, they hear me talk about embrace it, lean in. When they hear that, sometimes they confuse awkwardness with ineptitude, right? They're worried if I come across as awkward or imperfect, it's going to come across as inept. But I just want to call out here that the research says that if you are generally someone who comes across as hardworking, competent, capable, smart, if you are someone who generally embodies those qualities, so Megan, you know, you and I have not known each other long, but I know you do your research, you work hard, you are working hard to make this a well-constructed podcast. You research your guests. I know all of this. So if you are generally someone who does all of those things and you misspeak and you have a blunder, it's okay. It's actually called the pratfall effect, that phenomenon that we were describing about Jennifer Lawrence, or this is when a generally smart, capable person commits a blunder or a misstep. It actually makes them come across as more likable, more warm, because it knocks us off that proverbial pedestal that we put people on. So this isn't about ineptitude. I'm not saying you come into your next work meeting completely unprepared and, you know, blubbering through it. But if you are generally someone who has done a good job of preparing, of putting in the work, of appearing competent, of being capable, then understand the occasional awkward moment, the occasional embarrassment, the occasional blunder does not make you inept. That makes you human.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you so much for sharing that. First of all, I needed to hear that after the morning that I've had so far today. But also, just it hits close to home because I've always sort of had this story that I keep sort of pushing off talking about on the podcast, that I'm stupid. And I keep pushing it off because I think this is one of those that is so, so sensitive for me, and I'm willing to share anything and I will get there, but I'm still trying to work through it in my head. And I don't want to go out there telling people that I haven't done anything with this yet. And I still feel this because I still feel it. It's still really raw to me. So I'm sure that especially for women, is another huge story that people carry around with them. So just hearing that's something that actually it exists out there, that we're not. I mean, deep down at the end of the day, I couldn't be where I am if I was stupid, right? But it's like this, you know, you hear the stories when you're told it as a kid and it sticks with you. And that one's a deep one for me. So I'm still working through it, but it's just really nice to know that I'm not alone.
No, you're not alone. And I just, you know, I want to honor you for sharing that, even that it's on your mind. I think that's not easy to share. And I also want to call out that this is tough for women, because women, and let's add to this, women of color, are often disproportionately scrutinized for their awkward moments. There's sometimes in certain systems, in certain organizations, still this perception that confidence translates to some sort of flawlessness, right? And that is just a function of decades of the systems of business, the systems of finance being built by white cisgendered, you know, heterosexual or heteronormative men. Like that is the system we grew up in. And so there sometimes is still a catch-up game that we're playing where women are disproportionately scrutinized against these little missteps. So I don't want to paint with too broad a brush, right? If you're a woman of color and you sharing a blunder or a misstep doesn't yet feel accessible to you, then there is some discernment required. You know, can we test for psychological safety in that room as we share a misstep, as we share a blunder? It's not one size fits all, but generally, if you've earned that respect as somebody, you know, capable, smart, confident, that can hold their own in a room and a misstep occurs, generally, it is good to know that it will not be held against you in the way that we tend to imagine.
Or that we fear, right? I mean, I think there's this like unconscious or subconscious feeling of that we have to be perfect, that it creates this like perfectionism in us. We have to always be striving for the best or checking the boxes or accomplishing all the things, because I don't think we even recognize why sometimes, but I think a lot of it is just, it's just absorbed from the culture and the world around us. And that takes a lot of work. And to your point earlier, it's not something that happens overnight. This is gonna, it's starting to challenge these thoughts and these beliefs and these stories that we've carried with us for years and years is not an easy process. So
not overnight, like you said.
No, it is. It's, you know, with the help of a therapist or a coach or somebody, that's when you can start to kind of have that self-awareness and then actually shifting the thoughts and then shifting the behaviors, because it all starts with mindset, is the biggest piece. And that is that's a process, and that takes massive amounts of patience and self-compassion and all of that. And knowing, again, you know, you're not alone here. We all have awkward moments. We all have these same fears and anxieties, and you know, your situation might be not exactly the same as somebody else's, but everybody else has been through something similar.
Yeah, no, 100%. I think that that kind of last Kristen Neff quality of common humanity, even though people hear it and they know it, I think some of our challenge as ambitious professionals, especially when we talk about money, is believe that, right? We can hear it. That's one thing cognitively, but to believe it, to believe that the person that you have had a conversation with who looks so grounded in their conversations about these things, they felt this too at one point. So it's not a lack of, you know, emotion, unless you have, you know, neuro atypical or like sociopathic tendency. We all feel these emotions,
right?
It's just people have figured out how to deal with them to different degree, but it's learnable. It's a skill. Awkward tolerance, I call it, you know, building yourself the awkward advantage, is a skill. It's mental muscle building. And with enough practice, you too can build that advantage in your conversations about money and anything else.
I love that phrase, awkward tolerance. That's so cool. I'm going to start using that. It's so true, right? It just, we have to, it's a muscle we have to build up, just like anything. So before we wrap up, what would be kind of your maybe number one tip for moving through and normalizing these feelings of awkwardness? Again, knowing that, you know, I know knowing that we're not alone is so helpful and that everybody's going through it, but is there something maybe in that moment, like say, this is something I do all the time. I just met a client in person yesterday and I haven't had an in-person meetings in so long. And I'm like, do we handshake? Do we hug? Mm-hmm. And they came in for the hug and I was, you know, it's just, it's awkward.
Yeah.
So what's something we can do in that moment?
Oh gosh, there's so many things we can do, but I'll give you my one easy to implement. So if I'm going to challenge all of your listeners, do this today. Say it feels awkward, but do it anyway. So I have this mantra, do it awkward, but do it anyway. So in that moment, I've had plenty of those, right? Are we fist bumping? Are we hugging? What are we doing? So I will just literally say, okay, this is awkward because I'm not sure what to do with my hands. Are we hugging? Are we fist bumping? By just saying that at the beginning immediately takes those little walls of armor down. That common humanity is instantly accessed. The next time you put your foot in your mouth, rather than just sitting in that hot flush for longer than you need to, just make yourself spit out, oh, that was a cringe, or oh, that was really awkward, I'm so sorry, right? But just getting it out as quickly as possible, saying it, actually takes all the power away from it. This is an emotion we've heard often, the expression name it to tame it. Mm-hmm. Awkwardness, this works at like a 10x level. Mm-hmm. When you name it, when you just name the feeling in the room, all of a sudden, not only do you feel more relaxed, but everyone else does too. The tension literally melts away. So next time you find yourself in it, just say it, but do it anyway.
Yeah, I love it. And you talk about that in your TED talk as well. Somebody called you by the wrong name and you didn't say anything for how long?
No, for weeks, months. Yeah, it was my partner at my first job. He called me Helen and my name is not Helen, but I didn't correct him the first time. So months went by before I said anything. And of course, when I finally did it, that awkwardness had ratcheted up to a level 1,000, right? Yeah. Instead of me just, hey, this is kind of awkward because I just met you, you're a partner, but my name is actually Henna, right? I wish I had done that at the beginning. You know, lessons learned, still something that I work on, but just understand that if you say that, you are not deemed inept. You are not deemed incapable. In fact, you are going to bring your relatability and warmth up to a level 10. You can move on with whatever that thing is that you were trying to do.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. It's so, universal and such great advice. So this has been such a fun conversation. Thank you, Hannah, for being here. Before we go, can you tell everybody more about how they can find you and learn more from you and talk about the book and all of that?
Yes, thank you. My Instagram and LinkedIn are both Hannah Pryor, HennaPryor. LinkedIn is kind of my preferred playground, so feel free to link up with me in either place. The book is called Good Awkward. You can go to goodawkward.com to learn more, and it is available everywhere books are sold, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, a bunch of Barnes & Noble stores have them if you prefer to shop in person. You can get it Indie, Target.com. And I'm really proud of it. It actually, I can't even share the details, but it's going to be announced as a winner of a couple of awards coming up this fall. So it's gotten, an incredible warm reception. People are all telling me, not only have I learned a lot about myself, but frankly, it's a fun read. I promised if I wrote this thing, I would set out to write a nonfiction professional development book that was not a clunky, boring read. And I promise you, it is not. So if this resonated for you at all, I'd be so grateful if you picked up a copy of the book and then send me a message on social and let me know what you thought of it. It's not awkward at all. I want to hear.
Not awkward at all. Yeah. Thank you so much. And I love it because it's just so universal. It's all these are all concepts that I feel like everybody can relate to. So yes, it's incredible. And thank you again for your time. This was such a pleasure to have you here today. So thank you.
So much fun. Thank you.